This program brought to you by Guns80.com, America's finest provider of 80% AR-15 rifles. Go to Guns80.com now. That's Guns80.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. Alex is going to be coming back to the show and interviewing the author of Robopocalypse beginning in the next segment. There's just a couple more news article items that I want to go over first. Of course, there's the push in many, many states. I think it's 20-something. I think I want to say 29, but I'm not sure of the exact count. But all across this country, we have movements in state legislatures that are pushing to take away our informed consent for vaccines because of measles, okay? This is a childhood disease that I had, as we've mentioned many times. Parents would send their kids down to get measles because it was a very, very low mortality rate for measles. Nevertheless, because of that, they're using that to push for mandatory vaccines to take away our informed consent. And we've had several bills that have been pushed back on. North Carolina, they just had the sponsors take it down. And listen to what they said. I expected to get pushback, and I expected this bill to change, but unfortunately the pushback was so great that I lost control of it. This is someone who is trying to take away our informed consent. This is someone who is trying to force us to have things injected into our body, regardless of whether we agreed with that, regardless of whether they had our consent. That is a fundamental hallmark of tyranny, if you take away people's informed consent for medical treatment. And, of course, it was also taken off in Washington. And the Washington bill, the person who put this forward, who was a sponsor there, was a pro-choice, as many of these people call themselves, many of these Democrats who are sponsoring these bills. But, of course, in North Carolina, it was joined by a couple of sponsors who are Republicans as well. But the people, for the most part, are calling themselves pro-choice. But they don't want you to have a choice about the medicine that you put into your child or the medicine that you put into yourself. They're going to force that on you. The only choice you get is whether or not you're going to kill your child. But how you're going to treat your child, how you're going to educate your child, none of that you get a choice in if they had their way. But, of course, people are pushing back on this. Now, it was interesting, too, in the Washington case, the senator was also a doctor who was pushing this bill. And she had exercised her informed choice. She is an MS patient. She was on interferon. She had a child. She wanted to breastfeed. And, of course, the doctor and the pharmaceutical company both told her, you need to get off of that drug if you're going to be breastfeeding. She did research. She talked to people. She decided that it wasn't a threat, that it would be safe to do it. So she went against the advice of her doctor. She went against the advice of the pharmaceutical company. And she continued to take her medication. She exercised her informed consent, but she wants to deny that to others. She also had to pull back on this particular bill. And listen to what this lady in North Carolina said. She said, parents, however, should talk to a medical professional about this because we do have a high opt-out rate in Buncombe County, and that does create cracks in the shield of protection that we have. In other words, that's this herd mentality that they've got, this herd immunity that they try to say is necessary. And we've debunked that whole idea of herd immunity many times. Quite simply, if you don't have it for individuals, you don't have it collectively either. And it's a safety as well as an efficacy issue. But she said, however, trying to mandate vaccines was a step too far. Yeah, a step way too far. And there's some people there that are watching this closely who believe in it. If you're in North Carolina or if you're in these other places, don't think for a minute that they're not going to come back. You may have defeated them right now, but the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, just as Patrick Henry said, as Alex was reading in the last hour. Some of the people in North Carolina said, well, we've talked to one of the sponsors, Senator Tarte, a Republican, and he has an open health care bill that can be amended with new language. And withdrawing his support of SB 346 is not the same as withdrawing the bill and its contents. When asked if he would pull the bill before its reading, he says, I have a recorded quote of him saying, that's not going to happen. The bill's not going to go away. I was just talking to Clive and Bundy last night on the nightly news doing an interview. And as we were talking about, we saw the people stand up as a community to tyranny. And as Clive and Bundy points out, every time people do that, the government backs down. They did it with the vaccines. They will do it if you stand up. That's why the information war is so important. Stay with us. Alex Jones will be right back talking to the author of Robopocalypse.
Music, one of life's greatest pleasures, has tremendous power. The power to bring a tear to the eye or to quiet a racing mind. Music also has the power to heal and has been used through the centuries to treat depression, create energy, induce sleep, relieve stress and chronic pain. Now, Michael Turrell has created Whole Tones, the Healing Frequency Music Project. These frequencies were uncovered in the music of King David and believed to have astounding healing effects. Now, you can benefit from healing music therapy simply by listening daily to this music in the comfort of your own home or office. It's a new year. Give yourself the gift of healing and transformation. Don't miss this opportunity to get an absolutely free sample of this music that you can begin using right away. Just visit WholeTones55.com and get a free sample. Visit WHOLETones55.com today for your free sample. That's WholeTones55.com. WholeTones55.com.
The experts are clear. Sunlight, purified water, healthy non-GMO food, and having a good attitude is essential to a healthy immune system. But I go further with Super Nascent Iodine X2 from InfoWarsLife.com. 50% stronger than our original and revolutionary Nascent Iodine formula, coming from a deep earth crystal source that no other supplier has. Most other forms of iodine come from seaweed in areas plagued by Fukushima and other contaminants. Not our iodine. It comes from over 200 million year old crystal salt deposits and is tested and proven to be completely pure. Visit InfoWarsLife.com today. See the informational videos. Read the information there compiled. And for a limited time, when you use promo code NOW at checkout, you get an additional 5% off the entire family of InfoWarsLife.com products. Secure your Survival Shield X2 today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll free 888-253-3139.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
Listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We live in a time of unparalleled change, of evolution, of accelerated developments that will alter the future course of humanity forever. Genetic engineering, robotics, accelerated computing. IBM, the same company that ran the machines in the death camps with the ID numbers on the Jews and others, deciding how long to work them, how long to let them live, they now run the computers at the VA deciding who to put on the do not treat list. For me, we're already in a robo crisis. We're already in the middle of incredible change. And the architecture of this system is being built to where humans will be obsolete. And I didn't get that from my own perspectives. Look at these headlines. Washington Post, just a few days ago. Apple co-founder on artificial intelligence. The future is scary and very bad for people. Here's another headline. European killer robots pose danger to international stability. Autonomous drones. Skynet. In the robotic near future, most will, quote, live off government-provided income because robots will make humans obsolete. And that's, of course, what was written 15 years ago by Bill Joy in Wired Magazine, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. We have the author of Robopocalypse joining us via video Skype. That's being made by Steven Spielberg right now. His newest project is sci-fi survival script for Lionsgate, produced by Brad Pitt. He also, of course, has another popular app, Deep Space, a speech recognition gaming app. I've got a lot of questions I want to go over with him. But humans tend to understand that we're losing our humanity watching 10 hours of TV a day. It's linked to degeneration of our brains, early onset of Alzheimer's. We know that people can't do basic calculations now because of calculators. So much of this that has empowered us has also dehumanized us. And you read Ray Kurzweil and others' writings, they just say humans as we know it are obsolete. So it seems like that decision has already been made. Now, are these views that he puts in his books something that he's actually worried about, or is it just art for our guest, author Daniel H. Wilson? Thanks for coming on, Mr. Wilson.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There's so much to talk about. You're a pretty young guy, but you've written some best-selling books that are really good reads. What is your worldview on all this? Where does art intersect with life?
Well, I think, first of all, it's worth mentioning that I started out as a scientist. So when I was in my 20s, I earned a PhD in robotics and artificial intelligence from Carnegie Mellon University at the Robotics Institute. So now it's been 10 years. I'm just a science fiction author, but I really come from what I'm writing about from kind of an informed perspective.
A place of knowledge.
Yeah. And so, you know, with Robopocalypse, I have to say, first of all, I'm not worried about that actually occurring, but I did set out to depict what I considered to be the most likely possible robot uprising scenario that could occur. So it's not robots that come from the future. There's no time travel. There's no, you know, aliens from outer space. It's about mass malfunctioning of autonomous vehicles. It's about, you know, an AI using our data against us, using our cell phones against us, the personal assistants that are on smartphones now. So stuff like that I was projecting out into the near future. But as it actually stands, I'm pretty much an optimist when it comes to all this technology and its impact on humankind.
I personally am not worried about AI autonomous machines taking over, but if you look at the big corporations and governments, they're weaponizing them day one, and already through the smart technologies are social engineering, controlling, predicting mass movements. And so as a novice futurist myself has been talking about this for 20 years, we see the architecture of the NSA and the rest of it really creating a monopoly of information. That's my concern, is what humans will do with this digital web of the things of the Internet.
Yeah, you know, I think humans don't change. You know, human beings are, we have some fundamental things that are always going to be the same. We love our families, we eat, we sleep. But now we live more and more of our lives through our technology, right? So we're using our technology to kind of do the same stuff that we would always do. We're using it to communicate with other people. We're using it to, you know, to transportation. We have these autonomous vehicles to get us from one place to another. Communication, utilities, all the stuff that we used to do slower and in person, you know, now we do it faster. We do it through technology. And I think that that creates a lot of potential, but it also creates, you know, a lot of potential for misuse. Absolutely. I mean,
sure.
Because so much of our data is out there. So much of our daily lives, you know, there used to be sort of an equality and an anonymity, right? You know, when I was a kid, if I left the house, I left the house, you know, I was out there just anonymous like anybody. And these days, you know, those days are over, right? And, you know, now every move is tracked, and for better or worse, we're constantly, each of us, just hemorrhaging a stream of data out into the universe, and other people are certainly going to use that data for various purposes.
Well, I hope humans just don't become some vestigial barnacle growing on the technological terror, to quote Darth Vader, that we're constructing, because my grandfathers, especially my dad's dad, knew how to fix combines, fix trucks. They were designed so a human could fix them. Now it takes computers. It takes technicians.
Yeah.
I mean, we're having basically the world taken away from us, and we're building a world where we're obsolete. And that's what most of the billionaire tech company owners have been saying for more than 15 years. Are you familiar with some of the warnings of Wozniak and Bill Joy and folks?
And yeah, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, I sure am. But I have to say, so I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My dad ran a body shop that he inherited from my grandfather. So I grew up in a body shop where people were fixing cars, yanking them apart, you know, painting them. And I have to say that over the years, I've also watched that process change where now you have to be a computer technician. You have to basically use different tools in order to fix the car. And I don't think that that is necessarily dehumanizing. I don't think that we're necessarily losing anything. I feel like it's just an evolution. It's a change, definitely.
Sure. But I was thinking about you could fix a car in your own garage. The average person doesn't own the $50,000 diagnostic equipment now, so that centralizes it to shops. Then it becomes even more centralized to where it won't be in the shops anymore, where they have robots working on the robots. The elite openly have stated that they want to create a system where human labor isn't just cheap, it's obsolete. They claim it'll be good for the earth to reduce world population. The so-called smart grids are already surveilling everything we do. I'm sure you know Google, founded 16 years ago. Its founding documents were recently released last year. They said the plan was to build an AI to take over the world.
They're an information company. They want to collect all information. If you look at Uber, the ride-sharing service, they just started a partnership with Carnegie Mellon to build autonomous vehicles, and their CEO has openly said, we want to eliminate human drivers because they take 75% of our money is paying the human drivers to drive people around.
So we have to vote with our dollars and keep humans involved to make sure we build the architecture where we're not obsolete. I mean, this was a no-brainer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is that just trying to, like, fight progress? I mean, is that... So, for instance, if you look at the evolution of a lot of our consumer goods, right? It used to be that they were built in a way not because the corporations had used to care about us more,
planned obsolescence,
they never cared about us, but they never will because they're motivated by economic forces. But they used to only be able to build these consumer goods in ways that we could actually, as consumers, take them apart and fix them. You know, you used to be able to fix a TV, right? Now, because they're more efficient about building these things, we get better products, they're cheaper, they can do amazing things. I mean, there's no human being that can build an iPhone. You know, that's got to be a robot. That's got to be aided by these machines. And so you got to ask, is the trade-off worth it, right? Do I want to be able to field strip my iPhone and replace it with a piece of leather and some rubber bands and have it work like I'm on Gilligan's Island? Or do I want the most futuristic, potentially even disposable consumer good possible? And I'm not arguing for either side. I'm just saying there's a definite trade-off right there.
Sure. Daniel H. Wilson, author of Robopocalypse, is our guest. Here's what I'm getting at. There are natural developments in innovation and free markets that are wonderful. I'm simply saying, from reading the mass body of what the actual corporate chiefs are saying, they actually aren't just motivated by money. They control the central banks that issue the currency and credit. They're motivated by the idea of, quote, saving the earth by reducing world population, and they're maneuvering the population into a position where they are obsolete and will, quote, have all this leisure time, but that's really just so we're domesticated, and then basically you sell out your rights to be able to have children to be on welfare in the future, and then we're looking at a world where the elites merge with machines and they see a new creature on the planet. That decision, from the compendium of writings I've seen, nonfiction, is the direction that's been chosen by the social engineers, and I don't see that as a better world. I mean, I've never watched House of Cards until I had surgery a few days ago, so I watched 4 or 5 episodes, the first season and the third season. Every episode is about getting rid of old people and how they're worthless. And everybody says this is cutting-edge show. No, it's not. We're being taught how to be predatory, and we're being taught it's innovation to go into the jaws of the machines.
I'll tell you this. So I don't, I think that's a leap that I'm not willing to take in terms of believing that. I think that corporations can be, good or evil. I think they're motivated by money. But what I can speak to in my own experience is being a scientist, you know, and being in a laboratory and actually building this stuff, you know, like autonomous vehicles, speech recognition. I helped build, autonomous boats. boats for Northrop Grumman, you know, a big military contractor. But I have to say that at the end of the day, when you're in an academic, you know, setting, when you're in a university somewhere and you're a 25-year-old kid and you're getting a grant, you know, you're trying to get money from usually from the government.
Military Industrial Complex, DARPA.
NIA, the National Institute of Health, sometimes DARPA, yeah, with robotics, but often you're getting money from, like, health, you know, related
sure.
sources. So, but look, these kids that are out there building this stuff, they're not evil. They're choosing projects because they want to help people. So, in fact, all of my research was about, well, my mom was a case manager. In Oklahoma, she'd go out and visit really rural areas, and she'd check on elderly people that are living independently in their own homes, and she just try to make sure that they're safe. But you can't just drive out to every place in Oklahoma and check on people.
Robots will do that.
Right? So all my research is about using this technology to have smart homes so that people could live safely and independently as long as possible in their own homes.
I know there's a good end to it, and I know there's people that develop a lot of stuff for research with a good yeah. intent. I'm not a anti-technology Luddite here. What I'm getting at with you is that day one, the autonomous craft are for killing. Day one, they're building a system where the robots are meant to displace the labor force. And Bill Joy talked about going to that meeting in 1999 with 200 top technology owners, and they said, we're not going to let people play games and party all day. We're going to get rid of everybody. I mean, that's Wired Magazine.
See, that's the part that I think is a leap, you know, because when I think about corporations, typically what they're doing is they're trying to maximize their profit. And that's going to be a really interesting sort of inflection point to watch, right?
Sure. I mean, money buys you the McMansion, to quote House of Cards. Money buys you the McMansion and the wife that divorces you, okay? And power builds the stone fortress that's there in 10,000 years. The elite are all about power and life extension and selling the public that it's all sexy to give up their free will into this big combine. And it's all being sold by the different priests of this system right now. But when at the bottom of it is what I'm saying is the robo-apocalypse is here, surveilling, tracking, and then gaming the economy. I mean, the robo-apocalypse is Goldman Sachs gaming the stock market with high-frequency trading that is basically illegal.
Yeah, no, that is just definitely the high-frequency trading is bad news, I feel like.
But listen, what do you think we can do? Here's my question. You're an engineer, really smart guy, been involved in a lot of this stuff, best-selling author, on the cutting edge of media, got a movie coming out with Brad Pitt as well. Let me ask you this question. Then how do you want to build a future for your family? Do you want to have children? Where do you see this going if it was good and empowering?
Yeah, so I have a 4-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son. And I'm 37. I don't know. So I'm getting close to 40, and I've got a family, and I'm actually excited about the future of technology and how it's going to affect my kids, because when you start seeing your kids, what happens is as I've gotten a little bit older, the technology changes. I start getting kind of pissed off. I'm like, oh, it's always some new thing every day. I'm supposed to memorize it. And I'm just like, why can't things just stay the way they were? But then you start watching your kids and other children, and you see that they're adapting to this whole new world. All this stuff is totally normal for them. This is the scenery of their world, and they're able to do great stuff with all this technology. So, I mean, I'm excited about it. I don't sense that there's an ulterior motive out there to reduce the population or anything like that. I definitely want my kids to be aware that corporations aren't your friend and that, you know, you are simply a dollar sign walking around out there.
Sure.
But there's got to be a moment when these major corporations realize that they've, you know, we can see it right now, I feel like, with McDonald's and Walmart, how they just raised the income for their they're capitulating to demand.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, corporations aren't just doing it for the dollar. If they were smart, yeah, like Henry Ford, he doubled and tripled the average factory worker price, knowing he had to create an economy for
exactly.
his cars. It's like McDonald's 50 years ago started saying, please throw your trash away. That just made it all filthy and got rid of a service economy and entry-level jobs. We need to build a better economy based on humanity and taking care of the old and then building space. space bases, and if people want to merge with if people want to merge with machines, they can go with this colony. If they want to have a slower development, go with this colony. I mean, I think really space, off-world, needs to be the place where the real cowboy stuff goes on.
Dude, I completely agree with you right there. And that's exactly, yeah. So, you know, like, I think sometimes people have this reaction that, you know, technology is too scary. We've got to hit the brakes. And it's impossible. You know, human beings as an animal, as a creature, we build tools. That's what we do. If you put a human being naked in the woods, the first thing they'll do is they'll start building tools, you know, and I feel like as a species, we're at this point in our development where our tools are starting to get really cool, right? I mean, we're beyond.
Yeah, I built InfoWars to fight tyranny. And yeah, I was just a nobody from Texas. They're reaching 20 million people a week now.
Talk about being independent. I mean, what's more independent than modifying your body, you know, utilizing technology to modify your body if you want to upload your brain into a computer, if you have that capability? What's more independent than striking out into outer space? I mean, that sounds like science fiction, but so did Amazon having drones delivering packages.
So did sending colonists across the Atlantic Ocean. So did electricity. I mean, the stuff today is seen as, you know, magic 100 years ago. It's really just science.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote another novel called Amped, which is all about people using neural implants to basically cure disability. But, you know, what ends up happening is the people that use the technology, they used to have a disability, but now they leapfrog normal ability, and now they're superhuman. And it's about how society reacts to that. And I think a lot of times people assume that, you know, the wealthy people are going to get the best technology, right? Well, guess what? Like, if you're really wealthy, you don't really have a lot of motivation to get a hole drilled in your head and get a neural implant or to upload your brain into a computer. You're not desperate. You're happy with the status quo, right? So I think it's actually, in a lot of times, the opposite. The people who are most desperate, if you've got a child with a disability, there's nothing that's going to stop you from getting the latest technology to help your child.
But expanding on that, I mean, if you look at it, there are legions of studies saying that screen time is actually impairing neurological development in children. It's brain damaging them. And the elites, when you go to Bilderberg, I've covered it, they are actually obsessed with life extension. They just don't want the general public to get it. In fact, there's the headline, Daily Beast, the immortality financiers, the billionaires who want to live forever. So I'm not disagreeing with you overall, but Page and others are completely obsessed with it.
Yeah, but I think life extension might be a, you know, sort of a unique scenario there. And it's also something that they want to do. I think they're imagining doing this stuff like on their deathbed. You know, what surprised me was was hearing about how, how am I blanking on, Steve Jobs. You know, Steve Jobs, his cancer snuck up on him. And you know, when I imagine a billionaire who's out there, I imagine, you know, they're getting the cutting edge medical care. They're constantly, you know, getting their health, you know, checked on they're not going to die for as long as possible. But then, you know, you see that death comes for all of us, right? At some point.
That's what I'm saying. How do we know it's not a con game that they claim merging ourselves with machines or uploading our brain? You know, Kurzweil says he's going to recreate his dad off of just papers he had. I mean, that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. The idea of uploading your brain into the machine, I never really understood that because, look, if you personally want to live forever as yourself, right, that to me that means you need to keep your body alive. If my brain dies and there's a perfect copy of me, I don't care. Congrats to the copy. I'm dead, right? So then having a copy of yourself living forever, that's not about wanting to live forever. That's about erecting a monument to yourself. That's about having a talking gravestone that can tell people about how wonderful you were, right? You know, to me, those are two totally different things. Making a copy of your brain in a computer and living forever, I don't think they're the same thing. What do you think?
You know, I think that you're absolutely on target when it comes to that, but it goes beyond that at some levels, and I want to get your take on that when we come back from break. I want to talk about, when is Robo-Apocalypse coming out? When is the new sci-fi survival film with Brad Pitt coming out? I can't wait to see that. I want to talk about some of your other books, some of your short stories as well. What do you feel about futurist predictions, like Ray Kurzweil predicts a singularity around 2025 or earlier? We'll break it all down. And the moves, we've seen Time Magazine and others say, time for driverless cars, get rid of drivers, when the machines can do it better. We all go to prison, basically.
We're on the Stay march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
As the new world order continues to tighten its grip on every facet of our lives, we're all asking ourselves, how can we maintain our independence? The answer is clear. Get prepared, and you get prepared now. Now the only question left is, where do we begin? My Patriot Supply is here to help. Call 800-247-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. We're even covering the cost of shipping. Are you willing to rely on the government and FEMA in the event of an emergency? Call 800-274-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. You won't be able to find this deal online, and there is a strict limit of 4 per caller, so don't wait. Call now, 800-274-3070. That's 800-274-3070. Call right now.
The experts are clear. Sunlight, purified water, healthy non-GMO food, and having a good attitude is essential to a healthy immune system. But I go further with Super Nascent Iodine X2 from InfoWarsLife.com. 50% stronger than our original and revolutionary Nascent Iodine formula, coming from a deep earth crystal source that no other supplier has. Most other forms of iodine come from seaweed in areas plagued by Fukushima and other contaminants. Not our iodine. It comes from over 200 million year old crystal salt deposits and is tested and proven to be completely pure. Visit InfoWarsLife.com today. See the informational videos, read the information there compiled, and for a limited time, when you use promo code NOW at checkout, you get an additional 5% off the entire family of InfoWarsLife.com products. Secure your Survival Shield X2 today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll free 888-253-3139.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Robo-Apocalypse author Daniel H. Wilson joins us. Steven Spielberg's turning his best-selling book into a big mega blockbuster. Another one's in production as well, being produced by Brad Pitt. The Project Sci-Fi Survival script. We'll find out the specifics of that. I always marvel at the predatory nature of the social engineers, the eugenicists who founded the modern transhumanist movement. Most transhumanists mean well. They're what you call porch transhumanists. They're not in the inner engineer level. But when you get up into the big foundations and you get up into the big technocracy, just like Bill Gates has come out and said, Warren Buffett, machines will decide when you live and when you die, when you get medical care, when you don't. And so, according to their plan, and the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry, as I love to say, and it is the best of times and worst of times to continue down that line, a tale of two cities. But the main push is for authoritarianism, is for totalitarianism, is for autocratic despotism. And that's too bad because machines, computers, computing could empower us. But look, we've got more information than ever, more choices than ever, and we're more unhealthy, we're more decadent, we're more slob-like. People are choosing false reality and actually buying fake Lamborghinis and Second Life and things like this. So I'm not being negative. I'm not a pessimist. But when I say join the resistance, it means really look at the choices that are being made now. Don't just be a spectator. And so I think it's healthy to have books like Robo-Apocalypse and films, kind of a Maximum Overdrive meets your toaster. But at the same time, it almost cheapens it because it's then just a movie when the reality is it's a slow burn, a takeover of our soul. I don't see the current system empowering us, and that's my question for Daniel H. Wilson. It's almost like space travel. If you don't have gravity on your moon mission or your Mars mission, and you go on a year-long mission to Mars, you're not going to be able to walk when you get to the surface. Well, humans in the last 50, 60 years have come in contact with all these tools we've developed that are now driving us. And we're being told, and I knew this 20 years ago, and I'd say they're going to say that robots are better driving, you know, computer cars, and they're going to first have higher taxes and higher insurance, and then finally say, you can't drive your car. Well, that's where this is going. And so humans need to be challenged. Humans need to be able to take risk and be in danger. And the nanny state is about ending human empowerment, and you can see us getting weaker and dumber and more feeble. I mean, if you're a scientist, Daniel, and a really smart guy, the data's pretty much in that this is almost like losing gravity, that we're losing our strength, our vitality, our creativity. Really smart guys like you, or innovators like myself, we're going to be successful in the system no matter what. But for the mass of humanity, as Bill Joy wrote in Wired magazine, I don't know if you read this lengthy treatise, that the elite have decided that the general public's going to be basically done away with.
Well, I gotta disagree. I think that, you know, every individual can use technology in whatever way they see fit. You know, if you look at, for instance, watching 10 hours of television a day, yeah, that's terrible. Don't do it. You know, the corporations are happy to make money off of you. They're happy to sell you as all you can eat buffet. But, you know, it's up to each of us to use the technology appropriately. You know, for instance, we limit screen time with our kids. My wife is a child psychologist, and she actually, you know, advises people to collect cell phones from their kids if they have teenagers before bedtime and put them all in one place and charge them up all night, or else kids will be up all night on the cell phones talking to each other and texting to each other. So, I mean, again, the technology is always a double-edged blade. There's always going to be negative potentials, but there's also positive outcomes that you can get from using the technology.
But what about the numbers? Top scientists, medical doctors saying they're seeing neurological development problems in children with screen time. They're seeing clumsiness, almost autistic-like attributes. We're seeing neurological disorders off the chart. We're seeing just all sorts of, what is your answer to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we have any kind of epidemic of neurological disorders from screen time. I mean, televisions have been around for, 50 years or something. I mean, we had TV for a while. We now have access to a lot of different types of screens. You know, you see the parents tossing an iPad to their kid.
Yeah, people aren't talking at the dinner table. Everybody's on their pad.
Yeah, no, my wife hasn't instituted a rule at our house, you know, no screens at dinner time.
What do you think of Steve Jobs banning his children from him, period?
Yeah, I mean, that's smart, right? I mean, look, my wife's a child psychologist, but we're not above it. You know, if it's dinner, if we're out at a restaurant and the kids are being loud, then we're not above bringing
it's
out.
It's the equivalent of a sugar tit, the 21st century.
Sorry?
It's the equivalent of a sugar tit.
Yeah, you know, like it's exactly the same thing. Sometimes society provides an overabundance of something that's not healthy for you. And yeah, guess what? You know what? It might be up to the individual to make a healthy decision for themselves or for their family. And I mean, I think that's the opposite of a nanny state, right? I mean, there's nobody higher up limiting exactly what you can do.
But that nanny state is the tablet watching and tracking, creating a psychological detailed algorithm of everything you're doing.
Yeah, you know, actually, have you noticed there's been a lot of new technology devoted to like tracking your own health and tracking what you eat and what you drink?
They're going to use that to tax us, yeah.
Exercise. Yeah, I'm not super into it. I think
exactly. You get the new iPhone, you don't ask it to do it, and suddenly how far you walked, what you did, a whole database is tracking you. This is Big Brother on PCP. Let's shift into your amazing books themselves. How many books have you written? You've got several great websites, but which one should we direct people to? When are these movies coming out?
So I'm at danielhwilson.com, and I started writing books about 10 years ago. I wrote a book called How to Survive a Robot Uprising, which was funny, and then I wrote some nonfiction books like Where's My Jetpack, looking at kind of the science fiction future that we were promised. But my biggest novel has been Robopocalypse, and it has a sequel called Robogenesis, and it was purchased by DreamWorks, and Steven Spielberg's attached to direct it, but it's been in development forever. And, you know, at this point, they don't really even keep me informed about what's going on. So, you know, I'm hoping that they get to it. You know, in the meantime, I've transitioned into, I just love writing. I love science fiction. I love writing. I've been writing for DC Comics. I'm writing the Earth 2 series for DC. And I'm writing, this film for Lionsgate called Alpha, which is actually still under wraps, but it's a sci-fi survival tale that involves robots. And in this one, I actually portray robots in a good light. I show basically a piece of survival equipment that's robotic and it's basically a survival tale in the Antarctic. And my latest kind of project is an app. It's for the iPhone or iPad, and it's the first, speech activated game that you can get. It's called Mayday Deep Space, and you can find it at maydayapps.com. And really what I was going for is, like, you know, in these games, in novels, in movies, it's always so kind of one-sided, you know, you don't get to interact with the characters. And so the idea was that I'd make a game where you literally answer a Mayday call and you speak to this character and you guide this character off of a derelict spaceship and you save the guy's life by actually speaking to him over the radio.
Amazing. You are a prolific fellow, powerful stuff. Do you consider your book, Robopocalypse, to be a warning or just entertainment?
You know, I think it's entertainment. I think that it's really, really interesting to think about these themes because they don't go away. You know, people have been afraid of what the next round of technology means for humanity. We've been afraid of that, you know, since there was new technology. I think it's a really basic human thing to sort of imagine these potential scenarios. And it's part of the reason why human beings are still around is that we sit around and we think about
every angle.
Yeah, we think about every angle, so that we're able to make good decisions, you know, moving forward and keep ourselves alive, even as we build more and more powerful technology. And, you know, I'm impressed with humanity. I'm impressed with people because
I am too. The globalists are
this tower, you know, of technology. Every time we come up with a new technology, we're more powerful. We're more capable of destroying ourselves if that's the way it's going to go. And yet, you know, we just keep putting more chips on the table and making bigger and bigger bets and winning and moving forward. And so I'm excited about what technology is going to bring.
Sure, but I mean, look at World War II. It killed 100 million people or so, and we didn't have the atomic weapons until the very end. I mean, I do see us doubling down. I do see that happening. And I actually see the worst behavior out of the elites themselves. I see the grassroots actually trying to bring some sanity to all of this. How close is the internet right now to becoming a complete global mainframe?
Well, so, you know, that's I think, one misconception about artificial intelligence is that, you know, somehow it sort of lives on the internet. You know, the internet is just a really basic set of protocols for swapping information, you know, between places. And so,
sure, but that's a communication grid an AI would have, though, into everything.
Well, I guess an AI could use the internet in order to accumulate data, you know. But, you know, in reality, when you're building an artificial intelligence, you typically are trying to solve a very specific problem. And so getting a general level AI is very difficult. And so what happens is, yeah, you know, you can use the internet to get a training corpus. You know, like, for instance, you can collect a whole lot of chat data, right, in order to teach a machine what it looks like when people talk to each other or type to each other online. But the idea that an AI by itself is going to go out seeking that stuff and just sort of
sure.
pull in the
Well, here's what Google says, as you I'm sure know. All of us, billions of us on Google with our decisions, we make the AI merging with the computers and the data, and then they're able to kind of peer into the crystal ball that is the group collective consciousness through that web. And now as they have smart dust and the Internet of Things, that expands out to a 3D model where they're able to predict the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely, you know, you can model what's happening on the Internet, and then you can use the model to
sure.
make predictions about
And once you can
happen.
Model, if the public isn't aware of that, once you have modeling and tracking, you can have steering. And so it's about steering. I've talked to top former director of technicals, NSA, you name it. You know, William Benny was here 2 weeks ago in studio. And basically that's what it's all about, is controlling the future. The big secret is they want all this data so humans can then know where the trends are before everybody else does. And then if you know that, then you know how to dominate everybody 2-3 steps ahead, and it ends competition and really kind of ends free will. And I'm not being negative here. I'm bringing up the real problems that I and others see in this.
Sure. I mean, I think that's absolutely a goal. There's an example of this maybe a year or two ago where Target was doing exactly what you're describing. They were modeling their customer base based on all the information they have about in their stores about customer purchasing habits and when they bought it and who they were and where they bought it from. And they started targeting their advertising, and they started being able to predict when people were pregnant. And they started sending ads for baby stuff to their customers. And what happened was they sent a teenage girl a lot of advertising for newborn products. And her dad found it, and he got really mad until he found out that, yes, she was pregnant. And so Target has actually started obfuscating their targeted advertising. So they throw in a couple of random things just so that it's not too creepy, which is a kind of an interesting example of that backfiring, right? Sure, they're 3 steps ahead of us. They know exactly what we need before we need it. But if they're too obvious about that,
sure.
we get
creepy. Sure, we the enemy might not know, kind of like the new film based on a true story about true. The Imitation Game.
Yeah,
you can't let the Nazis know you got their code. You got to lose some of the battles.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can know all this data, right? And I think this is actually something that happens a lot with scientists. You know, you want to solve the problem. Somebody says to you, we need to predict what consumers want. And you go, all right, let's solve it. But you don't really think about the social aspect. You don't really consider, oh, wait, I'm going to freak people out.
Sure. Target and Walmart for 10 years have hidden retina scanners and voice print analysis to, quote, see what you're looking at down to each word. But now it's jacked into the NSA, and it's really a tracking grid for everyone. And of course, they're getting the database from the feds and out of the DMVs, and Facebook's involved.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of data sources out there, and it's true. I think you have to think about where the trade-off is worth it, you know, as you as you go out there and use these technologies that are going to collect data about you.
Sure. Let me ask you this question. We have the best-selling author of Rogopocalypse, author Daniel H. Wilson. You can go to his website. We'll put it up on screen for TV viewers, and we'll give it out before he leaves us here in a few minutes. In your gut, where do you think humanity will be in 100 years? What will we look like? Or will if humanity split off into 100 different development groups, and will there be a galactic renaissance?
I think one thing that you and I agree on, I think, is that the mass number of people, not the small number of people who may have most of the money or the power, I think the vast population of people is really the big decider about what's going to happen for humanity. Because at the end of the day, you know, we really vote with our numbers. And so I think that the future of humanity is not going to be human beings obsolete. I don't think it's going to be a bleak future where we're under the thumb of a robot AI that you know makes all of our decisions for us. I think that human beings are really adaptable creatures, and we're really smart, and we're really curious. And as a result of those really innate aspects of human nature, I think we're going to take the technology and we're going to run with it, and we're going to combine with it, and we're going to use it in our bodies. We're going to use it to propel ourselves into space. I think we really are going to, instead of competing against the robots, we're going to probably become more like the robots by integrating these technological advantages into our bodies and into our lives.
But if that's all engineered by the big five globalist companies, they're going to have all their back doors in that, like they have back doors and everything else today. DanielHWilson.com. Interesting. We've only got one short segment left. I want to come back and talk about any other films and what your new book is you're working on. And we'll let you get out of here and have a great weekend here on Good Friday. We'll be back this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. Central, and back next Monday as well, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm Alex Jones. My website's InfoWars.com. There's a lot of breaking news up there on the site right now. Stay with us.
Music, one of life's greatest pleasures, has tremendous power. The power to bring a tear to the eye or to quiet a racing mind. Music also has the power to heal and has been used through the centuries to treat depression, create energy, induce sleep, relieve stress and chronic pain. Now, Michael Terrell has created Whole Tones, the Healing Frequency Music Project. These frequencies were uncovered in the music of King David and believed to have astounding healing effects. Now, you can benefit from healing music therapy simply by listening daily to this music in the comfort of your own home or office. It's a new year. Give yourself the gift of healing and transformation. Don't miss this opportunity to get an absolutely free sample of this music that you can begin using right away. Just visit WholeTones55.com and get a free sample. Visit WHOLETones55.com today for your free sample. That's WholeTones55.com. WholeTones55.com.
As the new world order continues to tighten its grip on every facet of our lives, we're all asking ourselves, how can we maintain our independence? The answer is clear. Get prepared, and you get prepared now. Now the only question left is, where do we begin? My Patriot Supply is here to help. Call 800-247-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. We're even covering the cost of shipping. Are you willing to rely on the government and FEMA in the event of an emergency? Call 800-274-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. You won't be able to find this deal online, and there is a strict limit of 4 per caller, so don't wait. Call now, 800-274-3070. That's 800-274-3070. Call right now.
Finally, a hard rock album that actually says something. Envy, the self-titled CEO.
We all live in a world today where things aren't what they seem. And if you think the news is real, you're living in a dream. Politicians don't work too deep to fight for you and me. The representatives who cut the check fulfill the culprit. I can't stand this no more. Everything, all we see, all that we are led to believe, lies that we all must eat. Doesn't matter who you are.
iTunes, or Amazon.com. Visit envymusic.com. Monetary control.
Robo-Apocalypse author Daniel H. Wilson. Tell us about any new projects you got coming up and any final comments without me trying to direct the interview or asking you all sorts of questions. I appreciate you coming on, Daniel, and best of luck with all your future endeavors. At least you get people thinking about what's happening. I mean, at the end of your Robo-Apocalypse, I don't want to give it away, but you know, humans merging with the machines, I guess, is what defeats the original AI. I just hope my children have a chance to be human, and if they want to be human.
Yeah, I agree. When you look at their sweet little faces, it's hard to imagine this kind of technology, you know, and what it would mean. But, you know, my latest project is Robogenesis. It's the sequel to Robopocalypse, and it basically picks up right where Robopocalypse left off. And what it kind of considers more is the impact of massively intelligent artificial intelligences out there, but more than one. You know, what happens whenever we're kind of pawns caught in a bigger game when the AIs are battling each other, you know, and what does that mean for humanity and how do we survive? So,
well, the globalists might as well be AIs. They're totally ruthless. They want total power at any cost. I mean, look at history, and that's why I'm so pessimistic, is that they're already basically using what might as well be AI technology with these big aggregators to manipulate society.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the difference between humans and machines, though, right? Is a human being is going to have some kind of understandable end game, right? Whether they want money or whether they want power or both or control. You know, those are all things that you can understand why.
I want a future destiny and beauty.
Yeah, well, and artificial intelligence could be anything, because this is coming from, essentially, it's a program, right? So, you know, in Robogenesis, I consider AI that doesn't even know human beings exist. It's not even aware of us. There are other AI that, you know, want to have more traditional goals of controlling human beings or exploiting them. But then there are other AI that just want to lead, you know, they want to get out of there. And, you know, it's really interesting to consider all the different facets. Because
yeah, I would imagine AI that was truly sentient would want to just get out of here.
Yeah, well, and just because it's sentient doesn't mean that it's sentient in a way that, you know, that we can understand.
Yeah, it's not like a human sentient, I get it. I mean, can it recognize the beauty of a sunset? No, it's sentient that it can make its own decisions and has its own goal.
Or it might recognize, understand the beauty of a sunset on a level that we can't even comprehend, because it can see the sunset, you know, from satellites in space, and it can analyze the, you know, the spectral content of the, you know, it's really impossible to predict, because they don't use the same sensors that we use. They may not have the same thought process.
But AI is being designed for war. There's the real Skynet danger. Because it's being designed for killing, that be what it breaks. I mean, not even AI. What about a global malfunction or a global hack of these systems?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's there's actually a buddy of mine named Peter Singer wrote Wired for War, and he's coming out with a new novel. You should talk to him. And he talks about exactly this, what the future of warfare would look like if you can just hack an entire drone fleet and then turn it around and attack the person who...
Exactly. You're talking about Professor Peter Singer at Princeton?
He is, I think, a fellow at the Brookings Institute.
So man, yeah.
Political. Did he move?
Not had. That was been years since I read his writings with St. Peter Singer. Well, listen, very impressive. DanielHWilson.com. Daniel H. Wilson, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It was really fun chatting.
Thank you. Can't wait to see your films when they come out and read some more of the books. So, all right, that was an interesting interview. Thank you for coming on. Great job, the crew. This week, Nightly News tonight, 7 o'clock Central. Don't forget, it ends Easter night. We're going to extend it 2 days. Free shipping on all the nutraceuticals, all the high-quality products, the Made in USA attire, Patriot attire, to meet like-minded friends and spread the word. InfoWarsStore.com, InfoWarsLife.com, Made in 1776.com. They all take you to the same place. InfoWarsStore.com is a big umbrella site. I want to thank you all for your support. Free shipping on everything, 10% off on water filters, promo code WATER. That's it. I'm punching out. Until tonight, 7 o'clock Central, back to Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. Alex Jones signing off, InfoWars.com.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network.
aging starts at the cellular level. When cells become toxic, they die early and aging sets in.
In the past decade, we have witnessed unparalleled scientific discoveries. During that period, key patented compounds have focused on mitochondrial growth, nerve growth, and rejuvenation. But no one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. We now have the synergistic solution, DNA Force, just one of the key compounds. BioPQQ is backed by major clinical studies and over 175 PubMed-listed published studies. You want the best that's out there at the lowest price anywhere? The ultimate value, cutting-edge, trailblazing game changer that also supports the InfoWar. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll-free 888-253-3139. DNA Force from InfoWars Life.